Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton from Stillman & Company here on 102.5 The Game. Caroline, good morning. How are you? What's going on?
Good morning. Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we are excited to announce that Caroline going to join us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock throughout the season here on football season. And we're going to talk a lot of college football with her as well. Caroline, before we get to the college football today, I do want to quickly get your thoughts on this latest development in the Dylan Raiden saga with the Titans moving inside yesterday to guard. And it looks like, I guess at the moment, Nicholas Petit-Frere is going to be the starter at right tackle. What do you make of that entire situation, and what do you think this means for Dylan Raidens and John Robinson moving forward?
Yeah, I'm really not too shocked. I've been out on the Dylan Raidens stock for a while, and I think after that game on Saturday, it was one play in particular where Dylan Raidens was getting dragged like he was almost like walking a dog. I believe it was in the second quarter. It was a play-action play call, and Dylan Raidens gets dragged by the defensive tackle. And I saw that, and I thought, you know what? I have absolutely, positively seen enough, because whenever you're going up against a Chandler Jones or a Vita Vea or whoever it might be, Dylan Raidens isn't going to be able to properly block. So I saw that, and I said, you know what? This is just the last straw for me. And yesterday, when we saw Dylan Raidens get moved into guard, I turned to Jared, and I said, you know what? Mike Vrabel's going to be asked about this after practice, and he's going to say it's because Jamarco Jones wasn't there. It's because they didn't have a ton of linemen out there practicing yesterday, so he just needed to move him on the inside just for practice's sake, since they were running thin on offensive linemen. And you know what? That is exactly what Mike Vrabel said yesterday after practice. And I don't buy it. I really, truly don't buy it, because I think that they are seeing the same things that we are seeing. Like, look, he cannot play tackle. Can he maybe even play guard? Because I don't think that Dylan Raidens has a starting spot on this offensive line. But this offensive line group is far too thin for him to just not be able to contribute at all. He's going to at least have to be able to be a backup out on the outside of the tackle position or on the inside at guard, and he can't play center. So I don't think that Dylan Raidens has a starting spot on this team. Maybe they're hoping to at least get a little bit of depth out of him. But I'm out on Dylan Raidens, and I think the Titans are too.
Yeah, no, you are very strong in Vrabelese, clearly, Caroline. So one more follow-up on this. Yeah, for sure. So one more follow-up on this. Where are you on Nicholas Petit-Frere as a starting right tackle for an NFL team right now?
You know, you don't feel great about it. You don't feel great about a guy who is a career left tackle, albeit a very talented career left tackle, but then coming in his rookie season and then switching over to the right side where he's gotten some reps. He split most reps in practice with Dylan Raidens, and he split reps with Dylan Raidens in the preseason games, but that's still not a ton of time working on the right side to now be a starting right tackle in the NFL. If I'm John Robinson, I'm looking at every single opportunity to bring in a veteran tackle on this team. Not even just to start. Maybe they want Nicholas Petit-Frere to get the starting nod. But you just need depth at the tackle position, because knock on wood, God forbid, Nicholas Petit-Frere or Taylor Lewan go down, then what's your backup plan at tackle? And I think that right now, you know, even barring an injury on either side, you just need tackle depth. You know, if Nicholas Petit-Frere isn't the guy, because what I've seen from him in practice and what I've seen from him in the preseason game hasn't been amazing or fantastic. I would say if you give me Dylan Raidens or Nicholas Petit-Frere, I take NPF every day. But, you know, he had a false start in that preseason game, so it's just going to take him time to kind of, you know, refine the edges a little bit, but right now he's your best option.
Caroline Fenton with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Caroline, it is one of the great weeks of the year, the return of college football, Vanderbilt in action coming up this weekend against Hawaii. What do you make of the job that Clark Lee has in front of him here heading into year two with this Vanderbilt program?
Football is back. It feels great. I would say Clark Lee has one of the more difficult jobs in college football, because he believes in this program. He wants this program to win. And I think that's exactly what Vanderbilt needs in a coach, is a coach that at least believes that you can win at Vanderbilt. So that's step one. That box is checked for Clark Lee. He cares about this program. But I think it's really difficult, and it's only getting even more difficult in this age and era of NIL, to get people to buy into the Vanderbilt program, because the big are only going to get bigger. And if Vanderbilt, you know, the alum, or, you know, the collectives or the local businesses aren't putting the same amount of money or prioritizing NIL as much as some other places, like they are in College Station or Tuscaloosa, then you're just going to continue to fall even more behind. I think Vanderbilt is not necessarily a team equipped to win now or even in the near future. When I say win, I mean even just like 6 wins to make it to a bowl game, not even like win enough to make it to Atlanta 1 year. So, I mean, I think that I think the Vanderbilt might go Hawaii and win. I heard the Hawaii's coaches' comments about, hey, you better get ready, Vanderbilt, because we've got a hefty crowd of 6,000 waiting for you.
Like, it's going to be a madhouse.
Oh, yeah. I think Vanderbilt's going to be able to handle the Hawaii crowd, but I think that Clark Lee has a really, really difficult job ahead of him, just because the buy-in for Vanderbilt isn't necessarily there. The recruiting isn't going to be there, and it's going to continue to get even more difficult in this era of NIL.
So, Caroline, what's the feeling around the alma mater about Foghorn Leghorn down there at Baton Rouge? What do you think? What's Brian Kelly going to get done in his first year?
Old Skipper Beauregard Kelly. Yeah, Louisiana native.
Love it.
That's the golden question, because there are so many question marks in this LSU program, and I think we're starting to figure them out a little bit more and more. Of course, Miles Brennan announced his retirement from football, so that made the quarterback competition even more interesting, and I think that all signs point toward Jaden Daniels getting the starting nod there. So we're at least starting to piece together, okay, if Jaden Daniels is going to be the starter, then this is going to be very much so, you know, a run-first offense. This is going to be an offense devised for RPOs. It's going to be a very run-heavy offense. So we're going to be able to at least figure that out a little bit more, get a few more clues. There's just a few games on the schedule that are absolute key games. The first one, obviously, being Florida State next weekend. You have to start the season off with a win. Brian Kelly has to start off his era at LSU with a win. You have to be able to prove that, hey, we can go in a neutral site, albeit not very neutral being in New Orleans, but that's fine. You have to be able to start off with a win against Florida State, because the confidence about if this program can beat an Alabama or an Auburn or a Florida or whoever it might be later on in the season, Tennessee for this year, you don't feel very confident about that if you can't go on the road and go beat Florida State. So it all starts with that game, and then you look at the Auburn game, the Florida game, the Tennessee game. Those are all big toss-up games that are pretty much must-wins for Brian Kelly, because I view this season as ceiling 9 wins, floor 6 wins. So it could be anything in between there, and I don't think any of those would surprise me.
Caroline, who is maybe a dark horse team that stands out to you in the SEC this year heading into the season?
I think that everyone, when you talk about dark horses in the offseason, everybody's looking at Arkansas and Kentucky, because those are programs that haven't, you know, excelled, at least as of late. I understand Kentucky had a 10-win season last year, and people are expecting them to do even more this year. With so much consistency, Will Levis under center, Mark Stoops has won 10 games before, and he can do it again. And also Arkansas, everyone's very excited about the dynamic quarterback situation, and also Sam Pittman, and they have every right to be excited about it. And I think those are two teams that are going to be 8-plus win teams. I look to Ole Miss, and I wonder why we're not talking enough about Ole Miss. Jackson Dart transfers into Ole Miss, and, you know, he had a solid season at USC. He's coming into Lane Kiffin's offense. I wonder why we're not talking enough about Ole Miss and even Texas A&M. I understand Texas A&M went 8-4 last year. They lost 4 games that they really had no business in losing, but they also beat Alabama last year. So I don't take that very lightly. So I look at A&M and Ole Miss, and I don't think that we're talking about those teams enough. And I think we're focusing too much on the teams that have underachieved in recent history maybe overachieved last year, looking at Arkansas, looking at Kentucky, looking at Tennessee, not necessarily by record going 7-6, but just by excitement of how fun that offense was to watch last year. And I think that those programs are going to have a tough time trying to take the next step up this year. If you show me what you could do, now build upon it. I don't know if Sam Pittman is going to be able to do that at Arkansas, and maybe he will, but I don't think that we're taking enough grains of salt when looking at the Arkansas or Kentucky programs.
And no love for GBO. What about the Vols, Caroline?
I mean, hey, I thought the Vols were one of the more exciting teams to watch last year. It's fun. It's up-tempo. Hendon Hooker's a great quarterback. But the defense needs some work. And I always say this about Tennessee. They could put up 85 points, but they might give up 87. So, and they also have a pretty difficult schedule. I think that Tennessee, very much so, could be the second-best team in the East. But it all relies on that defense. And also, can that offense continue to build on what they did last year? It's a fairly simple offense if you really look at it, but it's so fast that people, you know, defenses don't have the ability to adjust to it. But if defenses, you know, the longer that Tennessee runs this fast, high-tempo offense, if defenses start to figure it out and are able to kind of match the speed of it, that's where Tennessee's going to run into some problems. And on the defensive side of the ball, they're going to run into some problems. But also, if defenses can't keep up with this up-tempo, what, 2-3 plays a minute? Then Tennessee is going to continue to build upon that high tempo offense and be able to win a lot of games. So I think I look at Tennessee very similar as they do LSU. I think Tennessee could win 10 games. I think Tennessee could win 7 games. It's all kind of up in the air with me for Tennessee.
Caroline Fitton, our guest here on Robbie and Rexer, are going to join us every Tuesday morning at 7:00. And also you can obviously catch her every day here on our station with Jared Stillman on Stillman and Company from 2 to 6. As well. Caroline, great stuff. We're very excited to have you join us every week and glad that college football is back as well.
Oh, excited about all of it. I appreciate y'all. We'll chat next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, as I smack my microphone going to break. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll get to more of the college football discussion coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Caroline Fenton for joining us in the last segment. We'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean coming up at 8 o'clock as well. Joe, it is officially college football game week here. Vanderbilt taking on Hawaii coming up on Saturday. Some other games taking place on Saturday as well in week zero, I guess, as they call it, in college football. We'll get to Tennessee here in just a few minutes because there is an interesting situation kind of brewing right now with the Vols as they head into their first game against Ball State coming up on September 1st. But I do want to get your thoughts on something we just talked about with Caroline. As you look at the SEC with the season right around the corner, are there any teams that stand out to you as potential dark horse candidates? And I guess we need to define dark horse because I think you said this yesterday, and I totally agree. Like, if it's anybody outside of Alabama and Georgia in the SEC title game coming up, I'll be pretty shocked. So what does dark horse mean? I guess that's in the eye of the beholder. But with that kind of being established, what stands out to you in the SEC for some potential teams that could be under the radar a little bit heading into this season?
Yeah, or the question could be framed like who's going to be the third best team? Because we know who the top two are going to be. I don't even remember what I said I'd do yesterday, but it's something ridiculous. If
you put on a New England Patriots helmet and wear it for a week.
That's right.
Sitting in the studio.
Yeah, Big Joe's classic Patriots helmet. I'll wear that for a week, okay? It's going to be those two. So who's third best? I mean, I think Caroline hit on some of the key candidates there. I think Kentucky's a candidate. I think Tennessee's a candidate. I do think interesting that she brought up Ole Miss, and she made some good points there on Ole Miss. I wonder with them, kind of the same thing people say about Tennessee is, you know, are they going to stop anybody? But I'm a big
– well, if you ask Tennessee fans, Ole Miss can stop people. Just lay down. Just
that's true.
take a nap on the field while teams are trying to go fast.
Hey, you know, some nights you just have 73 injuries.
Yeah.
That magically heal themselves in 10 seconds. It's just, you just don't know. I agree. Like Arkansas is really interesting to me. You know, and the thing is that the difference between them and some of these other teams that we talk about, you know, Arkansas, Kentucky, both, they have quarterbacks we know that are known commodities, right? And so does Tennessee. I mean, but look, I mean, for that third spot, Texas A&M, at what point does this ridiculous amount of talent pay out for them? Quarterback is, well, everybody's looking at that.
Well, they're the team that's expected to be the third team, right? I mean, they're
a lot of team. Yeah, a lot of people think that. But again, when you got questions at quarterback, that can be a real problem.
I totally agree. I'm just saying, like, I mean, they're preseason number six. They ought to be the third team, according to most people out there.
That's true. So they wouldn't fall into, it is two different questions. You're asking dark horse. But to me, it's like everybody is, other than the two. It's like the top two teams in college football, and then a lot of good teams, a lot of teams that can be good. I mean, LSU, Brian Kelly, first year, it's going to be really interesting. There is no doubt he inherited a ton of talent, and that he's a good coach. So could they come right in? And like Tennessee and LSU, that's why that to me is one of the most interesting games because, one, they don't play a ton anyway, but like that could be for this title, like the surprise team. Like neither of them is going to get it if they don't win that game. Like you got to win that game. But there's a lot of candidates, and I think at this point I've pretty much gone through all the possibilities, right? Like I think then those are all in the next tier, I'd say, which is a big tier. But I'd put all those teams I just mentioned kind of in including A&M. I mean, A&M at the top of it in terms of the most talent, but I don't know. I'm very like this is a year that Jimbo really needs to start paying off on, and beating Alabama is great, but then when you fumble around other weeks, you know, you kind of take away from that. I mean, he's got to put together a huge year at some point.
Oh, we know it's a great academic institution, and they're going to get things figured out down there. I mean, I do look at South Carolina, not as a team that I think could challenge in the East or anything like that, and not as a team like I don't think they're getting to double digit wins or anything, but I am really intrigued. You know, Spencer Rattler. Look, they won last year and they didn't have a quarterback. Like they started a grad transfer at quarterback like their first three games. It's Spencer Rattler who, remember, at one time was thought to be maybe the number one overall pick heading into last year. Like, what's he going to be at South Carolina? I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, there's obviously a ton of ability there and a ton of talent. If he puts it together, what does that mean for South Carolina? Like, again, like I still think he could have a great year, and they're probably not getting the double-digit wins just based on the talent that's around him. But they to me, you know, going back to the Tennessee part of it, that's another interesting game where I think a lot of people just view South Carolina and say, yeah, well, Tennessee should beat South Carolina. On paper, probably, but if Spencer Rattler is like vintage Spencer Rattler, to me, that totally changes what South Carolina is.
No, that's a good point. I have my doubts about him, you know, based on the latest information and all that went down last year, but I don't think anybody would argue that he doesn't have a ton of ability. And I would definitely argue that Shane Beamer is he's really interesting as a coach. First of all, the recruiting's gone very well for them, and I'm not surprised by that. But is he the guy who takes someone like Spencer Rattler and gets the best out of him? I like Shane Beamer a lot. I think the only problem with South Carolina and Shane Beamer is I could see him being one of those coaches someone else comes and plucks away in a couple of years. You know, that's the issue for South Carolina is possibly keeping him, and maybe I'm over. Stating what he's doing, but I feel like he's got that personality that you know. But first of all, it would be a lot of fun if you know, he gets things to the point where South Carolina and Clemson would actually be a good game.
Oh, yeah.
And then that clash of personalities with Beamer and Dabo, you know, like, that's kind of exciting to think about. But now I'm glad you brought them up, because just the Rattler factor alone is interesting. I also keep going back to last year and watching Vanderbilt, Clark Lee's first Vanderbilt team, just flat out outplay them.
You know, they should have won
for 59 minutes of a football game. And I'm like, God, that team's going to be good this year. But they did get way better by the end of the year. So, I mean, if they started to get better in the second half against Tennessee after being down 100-0, and Beamer's like, let's go, boys. Here we go. Big comeback. And but I swear, like, they actually started playing pretty decent football after that.
I'll give him credit. He remained positive throughout the whole time.
He did. Game. He was clapping it up over there. That's right. You know, those little victories. But now they're interesting.
I got a vote on the text line from Todd from Gallatin that says Mississippi State will surprise this year. I think this is a big year for the Crazy Pirate. Needs to show something. I don't know if he's like in danger of losing his job yet, but
no,
I don't think it's quite gone to plan this far.
See, the problem with – see, the thing about Leach is this is why I really I wish we could go back in time, and I'm sure Tennessee fans are like, shut your mouth. But I wish we could go back in time and John Curry's Wi-Fi works and, like, he hires Mike Leach, because we've never seen Mike Leach at a place where you can recruit at the level Tennessee can recruit at, right? That's what I wanted to see. If his thing, what he does, and obviously, look, say whatever you want about Mike Leach. Look at his career and what he's done at Texas Tech and Washington State. The guy, more with less, is absolutely, absolutely applies to what he's done in his career, and he's done it very well. What could he do with more, you know? And I think he's going to be fine, Mississippi State. And I think it's one of those things where if they're fine being about a 7-5 kind of team and having fun, having him be a goofball and having fun offenses to watch, it'll be fine. Now, maybe that's not okay, and at some point they move on. But, yeah, I don't know. I just don't see a very high ceiling there.
I just think about, like, the complete, you know, antithesis of Jeremy Pruitt. It's probably Mike Leach in terms of your day-to-day responsibilities. That could have been awesome in Knoxville.
Oh, I mean, it would have been – I mean, I think I just would have moved over there if he was the coach. I mean, you know, that would have been ridiculously fun because, look, there's a tiny fraction of people who cover Mississippi State compared with the people who cover Tennessee, and it's just it would have been wild, but oh well.
We'll get into the Vols coming up next. An interesting situation brewing with the eligibility of what could be a key player heading into the season. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
After the game, that fella came up and needed some advice on candy, and so I did what I could to help him out, and it seemed to catch on. It sounds like there's a lot of people that have candy questions out there. So anything I can do, I'm pleased to be there for everybody.
Oh, Joe, I swear I could listen to Mike Leach talk all day long. I love that guy so much. I really do.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Was that the rant about candy corn? Right? Is that what it is with him?
Well, there's candy corn. Yeah, that he gets upset about. I don't remember what that one specifically was about. He talks about candy quite a bit.
It's because he loves Halloween, right?
He's a big candy guy. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Though he's got some, you know, the whole kid getting married scenario too was some interesting commentary from Mike Leach.
Just beautiful stuff. By the way, I got some tickets to give away to see Spoon coming up the Ryman Auditorium on Sunday, September 4th. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Spoon at the Ryman Auditorium on Sunday, September 4th. 615-737-1025. 102.5. Joe, there is an interesting situation brewing, no pun intended, for Tennessee heading into this season with a guy that I think could play a significant role if he ever ends up being eligible for Tennessee, and that is Brew McCoy at wide receiver. He was at USC, since transferred to Tennessee, and at the moment, and here we are just a little bit more than a week away from their first game here, is not eligible for Tennessee heading into their game against Ball State. Now, you know, Josh Heupel has been talking about this for weeks at this point with Brew McCoy. He's been out there. He's been practicing. I think it's probably, Joe, their number three receiver right now, if I had to guess, heading into the season. And at the moment, is not eligible. And USC has been, I guess, rumored to be not very helpful in this process of trying to get Brew McCoy eligible. And finally, they put out a statement the other day. It's a quote: "At no point since Brew entered the transfer portal in January have we objected to him being made immediately eligible at Tennessee. The issue of Brew's eligibility ultimately rests with the NCAA, and we wish him the very best." And Heupel, you know, earlier this week talked about there are some things that, you know, they've done everything they can do. It's just out of their hands at this point. But here we sit, you know, about a week away now from game action for Tennessee, and a guy that I think could be reasonably important for that offense this year is currently not eligible.
Yeah, so and Trey Wallace, friend of the show, yep, reported on Outkick that USC hasn't signed the no participation opportunity, NPO. Austin Price also then tweeted kind of his story and basically said, so to that statement, you know, Austin Price, you know, called it a quote half truth statement. So again, basically, if they had signed the NPO, then it's not up to the NCAA. It's not the NCAA taking on this waiver situation. Why wouldn't they? I have no idea. To me, when anything like this comes up and a program won't do something like that, whatever it is to help the process, they are now hurting a kid. And that, to me, is ammo in the recruiting game. You know, yep. So I just don't understand why, if you're Lincoln Riley, you would entertain that. What the heck does it matter to you, right? I mean, really, like you're going to be vindictive about something, which, again, they can say, oh, we hope it works out well. But if there's something you can sign to expedite the process and you don't do it, well, then this becomes a thing that everybody talks about. Why would you do that? Also, hilarious for Lincoln Riley, whose entire team is immediate eligibility transfers, Caleb Williams and a whole bunch of other people, to like not do things to help someone else. Like, I don't understand. I mean, it's just a direct question that needs to be asked to Lincoln Riley. Like, why would you not do this?
Also, he's never coached Brew McCoy.
Right. So what is he?
Like, exactly, what's the big deal?
Right. And look, there's more to this. Obviously, Brew McCoy had serious allegations. But I mean, you know, last year. So, I mean, that to me, does that have anything to do with the NCAA holding off? I don't know. I'm just saying, like, that's another aspect of this. I don't know why that would be a factor for USC. So, like, to me, this is a lot of times these things. Well, look, what a totally different situation. It was academic, it was JUCO stuff, but Byron Young last year, right? It took him like a weekend before he got cleared for Tennessee.
Yeah.
But I figure this probably happens pretty close to the start of the season or maybe shortly thereafter. But in the meantime, really, like, it's a totally fair and I think urgent question of Lincoln Riley and that program. Like, why is this a thing? Like, if there's something you can sign, why would you not do it? That there's got to be an answer. There's got to be a question asked, and I want to hear what Lincoln Riley has to say about it. I mean,
yeah.
And if you're him, it's just stupid for this to become a story, but you've allowed it to become a story. And it's just Lincoln Riley, just, man, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see what he does at USC. Some things about him that make me scratch my head a little bit about whether he's actually this superstar hotshot guy that, I mean, you talk about inheriting a Ferrari,
yeah,
from Bob Stoops. And he did some good things with it. I'm not saying he didn't, but I don't know, man. Stuff like this really makes you wonder what's going on in a guy's head.
It does. And now, you know, from Tennessee's standpoint, I don't think it's really that big of a deal if Brew McCoy misses the Ball State game. But it'd be pretty nice to have him against Pittsburgh. I know that. Like, you need as many weapons at wide receiver as you could get against Pittsburgh. So, I mean, look, Tennessee's a 32.5 point favorite against Ball State. They should be able to, you know, just run the ball and win that game or throw it to Cedric Tillman. But you're going to need Brew McCoy at some point this year, I would think, to be, you know, a decent factor for your team. Like, I still think the 1 and 2 right now with things the way they're constructed is going to be obviously Cedric Tillman, number one, probably Jalen Hyatt, number two. But, you know, Brew McCoy is a guy that, I mean, he's a 5-star recruit. He's really talented. You know, can he put it together with Tennessee? I don't know. But I think they're going to need him in the Pittsburgh game.
Well, I do too. And I think he's, you know, you think, you know, Hyatt is the starting slot receiver, and I think he's going to be a very good player. And we know what Tillman is. But, you know, McCoy and his physicality and everything in tandem with Tillman on the outside, it's a really appealing possibility for this offense. And you just, like you said, I mean, there's just, I think there's a lot of guys who they have hopes for, who have talent, who could be good, but things aren't maybe totally materializing like they hoped with some guys. And so McCoy would, I think, be instantly a very important part of this offense. So, you know, if his first game is Pittsburgh, well, let's see, he could still go make plays in that game. If he's not eligible by then, boy, that's a problem. And again, it goes back to like, why is this a thing? If it's as simple as NPO, sign it, and then the waiver process is over, I just can't understand why Lincoln Riley would decide to take that on. This used to be a thing, and I think this is where media can be very useful and productive and positive. That, you know, these coaches used to vindictively or you know, ADs, you know, not help kids, you know, move to other places and things like that. And every single time, it should become a story because it's ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous that Lincoln Riley can pick up and go and go do what he did and, you know, and totally pillage the Oklahoma program in the process.
Yeah.
And then that there could be any sort of mechanism to keep someone from freely moving in college football anymore.
It's ridiculous. There is some other news on the Tennessee front, Joe. We talked about Lynn J. Dixon, running back, coming over from Clemson and joining the running back room at Tennessee. That lasted about 18 days. He's no longer there. So Lynn J. Dixon, no longer with the Tennessee football program. I mean, number one, I guess that speaks well of the freshmen that Tennessee have at that position and maybe the depth. But Lynn J. Dixon, his tenure as a Tennessee volunteer, very short-lived. Didn't make it through fall camp.
I'm just wondering if I'm just wondering if Lynn J. Dixon, based on his career to here, has a little bit inflated view of what he is as a player.
I think there could be some of that.
West Virginia, Clemson, Tennessee. I mean, I guess like if you are only going to be happy, and I don't know all the details here, but if you're only happy with showing up somewhere and you are the best back and here you go, you're going to carry the mail, then you need to go ahead and look down a notch or two, you know,
play it like Alabama State or something. Yeah.
It's going to be competition and yeah, these freshmen are very talented. And by the way, Jabari Small is really good. You know, if he stays healthy this year, he's going to get 1200 yards. I believe he's 1,000-yard back. And Jalen Wright's, like they needed depth and I liked the addition, but, it seems that maybe he underestimated, you know, the rest of the room. TN Racers Elite One on Twitter says, check the history of Heupel and Riley. Riley's being petty. So again, if that's what this is, first of all, I will say this on the Heupel front. You know, I appreciate that Josh Heupel is typically classy, doesn't get into stuff. He's low key, right? He doesn't like controversy. I'd say this is a situation where if that's what this is, he should probably go ahead and be a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
In speaking his mind on this, I would say, you know, if that's what this is, if it's pettiness with the Oklahoma connection, whatever the hell, again, we're talking about a young person who, understandably, he's had trouble in the past, but I mean, you know, there's no reason this should be a thing. And so a lot of media people are saying that, but I think Heupel should say that too. This is a good time to go ahead and take a shot at someone and push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes it's worth maybe taking things public when you have to. 615-737-1025. Tune in for Nashville Sounds baseball tonight at 5:35 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds are on the road facing the Durham Bulls, the AAA affiliate of the Tampa Bay Rays. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. You can catch it every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rex Road, I turn things over to you.
There isn't possibly enough time today for me to get through one Rex Rant.
Not enough time.
Just bear down, Joe.
I just got a text about my mom's Southwest flight from Virginia, which we need her to come this week because we're moving our child into college. So far, we got a three-hour delay. Let's start there.
Oh, boy.
This is not the intended rant, but why is Southwest delaying every flight, apparently, still?
They don't have anybody.
Can someone answer me?
It's all over the place, man. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, mine got canceled and just didn't reschedule me, and I'm still waiting for a refund, and that was July 4th.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I'm really looking forward to my 8 p.m. flight to Michigan tomorrow. I bet you that'll be just fine.
Don't jinx it, Joe. You'll be great.
A great week for you so far.
Could also rant about dishwashers that are just left half empty and not filled up to run, washing machines that are slammed so often that now they are basically fractured and you have to like wedge it so it perfectly gets like this so then you can turn it on and like do laundry. Can't wait to try to teach my mom this week how to do that. Could also rant about a garage door being left open all night and a car door being left open all night, which is awesome. But actually, I was going to rant about high school. I mean, I can come up with some more stuff, too. I was actually going to rant about the clock in high school football. Okay. So if it's, you know, the NFL does not have to set the tone for everything, okay? But if in an NFL game, someone goes out of bounds and then the clock just keeps going until the last 2 minutes of either half, in an NFL game, you get a first down and you just keep running the clock and you move forward. Can we not get a little bit better with our timing at the high school level? And at like the college level too.
Yeah.
And I admit this is a selfish thing because, you know, you got a freshman game last night and then you got a JV game and there's going to be some groggy Tuesday mornings because with a kid playing JV football and games that don't start till after 8, you know, it's just going to be a thing, which is fine. But, like, we're talking about full-on clock stoppages every time someone goes out of bounds throughout the entire game.
Ugh.
And I'm like, dude, this can't be. This has got to be changed. Especially you think about a weeknight, I mean, it's a weeknight, and again, you've got two football games, which is great, but like your game is not getting over till 10. So then kids who like straight from school, you know, got ready for the game, they ate with the team, they warmed up, all this stuff, have not done one lick of homework, you know, and they're done playing at 10, and then you shower, and then how about some food? Like, a half hour would be sweet. A half hour would help a lot. I just don't understand how every time you're going out of bounds, you're stopping the clock until the next snap. Like, this has got to change immediately. Someone explain to me why this is still in place. I mean, even in college football, I don't know, in fact, someone remind me of the rule, but it's not the entire game that you go to out of bounds and the clock stops.
It is not. Also in college football, like, are we still doing the, hey, you get the first down, the clock stops till we reset the thing up there? Let's just, college football games last 4 hours and 15 minutes. Let's get this thing rolling a little bit.
That needs to change. Absolutely. That needs to change, and it needs to change at this level too. I could be wrong, but I swear for my high school in Virginia, we did not have the clock stop in the state of Virginia, the clock stoppage on that. Like, that was just purely a college thing, but I could be wrong. I just would like a lot of things to get better in life, okay? Can we just...
Well, I don't know if you've noticed this either, and this could just be me and my experience there, but I went to a few high school games last year, which, by the way, love high school football. I really do. It has the longest halftime of anything I've ever seen in my entire life. College football, NFL football, I feel like pro football, the halftime's done very quickly.
It's 10 minutes.
High school football halftime shows, it's unbelievable. Like, I know you got to get, you know, both bands out there, and
right.
I love that part of it, but my goodness, the halftime in high school football takes forever. It really does.
Yeah, and on that front, and that's where, like, last night, that, you know, that was a quick, I think it was just a 10-minute halftime, I believe, so that was good. I mean, I hear you. I do, like, the bands and all the kids put in so much hard work on all the different things for the halftime stuff. So I think, you know, the pageantry of college and high school football on a Friday night high school football is, I mean, that, to me, it's worth it. But yes, it is when you're used to the NFL.
Got
to
get back
stuff
out there and warm up again. I think everybody's got to go through stretch lines again.
Yeah. But if you just took away some of these other things that extend the game, it wouldn't feel as long, right?
I agree. Like, there's no reason. Look, let's be honest. If you're throwing the ball in high school football, by and large, there are probably going to be enough times where the clock stops on its own. We don't need to help the clock stop. I think the goal should probably be help the clock continually speed up.
Well, and that's another thing, is that everybody throws the ball all the time now.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, I mean, we basically ran the veer, you know. So
I ran the wing tee. Yeah. I was a wide receiver in the wing tee.
Just get out there and block.
You block the corner.
You should love blocking receivers more than you do, by the way.
Big NWI guy. Big Alan Lazard guy. Love him.
Nate's saying, don't bring NFL into high school. I'm just saying, like, the clock stuff, man. Like, especially if you got two games on a weeknight. Maybe just adjust the rule. You know, Friday night, hey, it's Friday night, right? People can stay out late. They're going to go out after the game and get dinner and be out late. That's cool. Tuesday night, kids have homework, two games. Come on, Nate.
I will say, at least in high school football, they do have the running clock rule. Because some of these games get out of hand pretty quick. I'm very thankful they have the running clock rule in the second half. Otherwise, some of these games, I mean, look, my alma mater, I love Hendersonville. They're a very good football program. They've been a very good football program basically my entire life. For some reason, they get stuck playing Oakland the first game every year, which has never gone well for them. You know, they were down 42-0 the other day in the third quarter. Just keep that bad boy moving. Just keep that clock going. It's time to get out of there.
Yeah, and that's something that there's something where the higher levels could learn, especially college at times, right, from the high school level.
Yeah.
And let's put our pride away and go running clock, baby.
I mean, some of these games, it's like, Have you ever watched, like, you know, Alabama's playing, you know, New Mexico State or whoever it is, and it's, you know, 48 to nothing with 10 minutes left in the third quarter, and you're just like, my goodness, this game is so passed over, and it's still going to take another 2 hours and 25 minutes for it to get done here in the second half. It's unbelievable. Let's get this thing moving.
I need a running clock on this week, okay? Give me the running clock.
No, you don't want it to be over, Joe, because your son's going to college.
Yeah.
You need to
savor the moment.
Stop it.
Well, JC in Goodsville.
Hopefully he doesn't burn the house down before he moves out.
Hopefully not. JC in Goodsville said, we had a JV game at Lebanon in 1 hour last week. They got the lead, and the home scoreboard dude was just taking it to the house. He's done with it. Just let it go.
Hey, man, I'm with that guy. I am with you all the way. There's a little bit of wiggle room there. Let that clock roll. I hope nobody looks.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessee, and we'll get his thoughts on the Titans as they enter into a week of practice with the Arizona Cardinals. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.